Support for MPB comes from the Mississippi Museum of Art in Jackson. What Became of Dr. Smith by artist Noah Satterstrom is on view beginning April 20th. Learn more at msmuseumart.org.
This podcast is a local production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting. It's made possible in part by contributions from podcast listeners. Please consider making a contribution by going to the Donate Now tab at mpbonline.org. Thanks for your financial support.
Welcome to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Think Radio, where each week we talk with creative Mississippians. I'm your host, Leslie Barker, Arts-Based Community Development Director at the Mississippi Arts Commission. And today I'm talking with award-winning voiceover artist, actress, writer, and puppeteer, Carrie Grayson Horn. Carrie is a multifaceted artist, and we have a lot to talk about, so we're going to dive right in. Welcome, Carrie.
Oh, hi. Hi. Thank you so much for inviting me here. I really appreciate that.
I'm so excited to talk with you. So we're just going to start at the beginning, because okay. I know that you have, as we all do as artists, a story of what brought you to being an artist.
Of course. I was born at a very early age. It's true.
So what started your path, like, in your childhood to being an artist?
Well, I was lucky enough to be born into a broadcasting family. Mm. My dad was a broadcaster. My uncles are broadcaster. You know, I have just a lot of theater. My grandmother was an actress. It's just all this different type of things that just conglomerated in together. So I was used to being in radio stations. Mm-hmm. I was used to being in television, and just seeing that happening and seeing just the I loved the backstage part of it. I loved the onstage part of it. And so as I grew up and got into school and all that sort of thing, and I discovered theater, discovered band, it kind of fit, you know. Mm-hmm. I knew I wasn't going to be a rocket scientist or a chemist or anything like that, but I got into those things, and that just something clicked, and I knew this is what I want to do. And dad is Walt Grayson. Hi. So dad also had to, as a radio DJ back in the 80s, he was responsible for writing some of the spots that they had from sponsors and things like that. So he had to write a spot for Gafers. If y'all remember Gafers.
I remember Gafers.
Yeah. So they had a children's swimwear sale going on, and he's like, man, I need like some kind of kid to do the kid's voice in this commercial. Where do I have a kid? And he's like, oh, you come here, Carrie. And he sat me down in front of the microphone, and he handed me the script, and he said, these are the lines you have to read. And I was like, okay. And so just reading the script and then hearing the spot back later on the air, I was like, this is fun. I like, and I didn't have to get dressed up or anything. I didn't have to fix my hair or anything. I just did the spot, and it was a lot of fun. So that was my first taste of doing voiceover and being in front of a microphone, and I fell in love.
Wow, that's so cool. So you grew up here in Jackson, is that right?
I did.
Forgot to ask
yeah.
you that part.
Yep, I am a native Mississippian, and I think I'm like the sixth generation Mississippian oh, wow. in my family, so... Yeah, we've been here a while.
So your first kind of venture into all of this was a radio commercial. So what happened after that? How did you chase that rabbit?
Well, chasing that rabbit came a little bit later on. Beginning around that time, though, I did church plays mm-hmm. and that type of thing, and did school plays in high school. After I got out of college, that's when while I was in college, I was like, I want to be a theater major because I want to be a voice for cartoons. Mm-hmm. That's something I want to be. And so that was one thing that I wanted to try to do. So I studied dialects, studied all these different types of things, watched cartoons because that's important.
Obviously.
And just started creating voices on my own, started listening to other people and how they did voices, and just trying to learn that way. But also just the teaching that I got from USM, from Hines Community College, my professors that mm-hmm. I had growing up, always encouraging me, and just seeing all the work that everybody else was doing was just kind of a buoyancy type of thing. Just lifted me up and was mm-hmm. made me want to do better and want to make everyone, you know, really happy about what was going on, what was happening. So it was the theater that I was able to see. I can do this on, I can do voiceover on my own. This is a theater I can create just by myself. I don't have to have a whole lot of other people, but I still love the community of theater and what you get from that. Mm. So it was just a little bit of the feeding off of creativity and feeding off of being able to create is what I loved.
Do you have a memory of one of your first onstage performances?
I do, actually. It was, gosh, if y'all even remember Lottie Moon Christmas offerings.
Oh, yeah.
I was at Timberlawn Baptist Church. I had to be about seven. And I was dressed up in a very tight-fitting sari, like a person from India would wear. And so I had this very tight-fitting sari. And I was trying, you know, and it was my turn to get up on the stage. Little Carrie, tiny Carrie, wrapped in a really tight sari, and I'm trying to get up the stairs, and there's no way. Somebody from the congregation had to pick me up and put me on top of the stage, and then I could say my lines.
Oh.
That one sticks with me, so. And I still stayed with it.
Oh, wow. I do remember Lottie Moon.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
You know, and you also mentioned cartoons, and I read an article about you in the Jackson Free Press and talking about how much you loved cartoons and practicing the voices you heard on cartoons. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, that was something that I really enjoyed doing in elementary school. That was back when I would watch TV. This was before the days of VCRs. So if you can remember back that far, there was no way to record your things. So what I did, I had a tape recorder, one of those big, huge black and silver boxes that you press play and record. And I would hold it up to the speaker of the television set whenever the Smurfs were on or the Snorks or the Gummy Bears or something. And then I would play those back because I really enjoyed the voices. And I started to put two and two together. And I'm like, wait a second. This guy, this lady who's doing the voice for this Smurf also sounds like Grammy Gummy over here, who also sounds like the old witch on the Bugs Bunny commercials. Oh, my goodness. Who also sounds like, and I began to put it together. And I was like, wait, those are people who are doing those voices. It's not the cartoons that are doing the voices themselves. So that's a job? Can I have that job? I would like that job. So that was something. And I would go to school, and the kids, when you get back on Monday, you know, Monday on the playground, I would just start reenacting the voices from the Smurfs, from the Gummy Bears, and just start reenacting some of the stuff that I had seen on the cartoon that past weekend. And it seemed to make people smile, so.
You're like a one-woman show on the playground.
It was like that a little bit. It was like that a little bit.
That's so cool. You must have, like, the sharpest ear, you know, to really have picked up on that as a kid.
It was something that I didn't pick it up at first, of course. And this was before they really had credits on cartoons, too. So I knew Mel Blanc because his credit was up there. But all the other ones, it was really hard to figure out who was who in pre-internet also. But it was just something about the voices. I was like, wait, I don't know what it was.
That's fascinating. This is my background's in directing, and I got to be honest, whenever there's dialects in a script, I get nervous, you know, because I'm not an actor, so I am always in awe of the people I work with, but it really, some people just have an ear for it.
I've found that there's two different ways of learning a dialect. Either if you're a very musical person, you can hear it being spoken. You can hear the cadence. You can hear the, you know, just the lyricality of it all. And that'll help you to learn. If you don't have a musical ear, you can learn by, okay, I know in German they substitute this vowel sound for this vowel sound. So instead of, you know, instead of thank you, it'd be sounding more like thank you, you know, that kind of thing. So there's a way to do for non-musical eared persons, and there's a way to do it for musical minded people. So
I'm glad you mentioned that about the music, because you also mentioned band earlier, that is something I've been so fascinated by all of the different things you do, and I didn't even know about that one.
Oh, yeah.
So you're a musician.
I was.
You were a musician. But so tell us about that, and then I want to talk about maybe how that played into the way you hear things.
Sure. Again, grew up in a very musical family, singers, musicians, all that sort of thing. So I took up the clarinet because I saw that one of the Huxtable kids on The Cosby Show played clarinet, and I really wanted to do that. So I picked up the clarinet, and in junior high, went through junior high band at Northwest Rankin, high school band, went on into college band, and was in there for a semester, but then I discovered theater. Mm. And the band director said, you have to make a choice. And I said, well, it's been lovely knowing you. I wish you all the luck in the world. I'm going to theater. Bye.
So that happens with theater. Yeah. It takes over.
It really does.
When you step into it.
It really does. It takes up social life. It takes up working life. It takes up school time. So, yeah. Which I don't mind because I enjoy the heck out of it.
Oh, me too. Absolutely. It's like you dip your toe into it, and before you know it, you've fallen into this whole new world. Because, same thing happened to me in college. I was going to minor in theater and major in English, and then where did that English major go? You know?
Exactly. Who knows? Exactly.
But it really is just its whole world. But with the music you were talking about, do you think, or how do you think that played into the way you hear, the vocal side of things?
I really do think it helps out. Again, with Dad working at a radio station all those years, too, I was surrounded by that type of music. And just being able to pick out different rhythms, different notes and all that sort of thing, I think it does. You're able to pick out, how does this sound? What rhythm is it at? And how does it make up the whole sonorous, that sounds like a big word, the whole sound of what you're trying to do? And how does it fit in with other people on stage with you also? Because if my dialect sounds a little bit different than this other person's dialect, we've got to somehow come to a meeting in the middle. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So we all sound like we're from at least the same town, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm Leslie Barker with the Mississippi Arts Commission, and I'm talking with voiceover artist Carrie Grayson Horn. So just a curious question I have. When I'm watching television shows, because we're talking about dialects, and you were just talking about how you have to fit into the same world with the people around you, is it hard for you to hear Southern accents when people... I have such a hard time. This is a tangent, I know, but it's so hard.
It's a little jarring sometimes, but it is a little bit sometimes. And you can tell almost where the person is originally from
right.
when you hear them trying to do the Southern accent. And it just makes me go, oh, bless their hearts.
It almost all defaults to like very fancy, like you're at a Kentucky Derby, like aristocratic Southern.
Or very much the other way.
Or very much other. There's nothing in the middle.
There's nothing that sounds like us.
Exactly. You know? And the funny thing is, even when you work with Southern people, sometimes it gets turned up so much.
Oh, true. And that does make a difference. Whoever you're around for a very long time, your accent, your dialect will seem to just flow into whatever they're sounding like. So it's just a meeting of the minds thing.
I just love talking about it. So talking to an expert, I was just curious about...
Well, we'll call in the expert. Hang on, where are they? Hey. Are they next? Good.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
The expert's coming after the break.
Good.
We are
going
to take a short break. You're listening to the Mississippi Arts Hour. I'm Leslie Barker, and I'm talking with voice artist and actress Carrie Grayson Horn.
This is Leslie Barker. Thanks for listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. The show airs on MPB Think Radio every Sunday afternoon at 5. To access all of our past shows, subscribe to the Mississippi Arts Hour podcast using your favorite podcasting app.
I'm Professor Richard Gershon from the University of Mississippi School of Law, host of In Legal Terms. If you're enjoying this podcast, I encourage you to listen to In Legal Terms, the show about you and your rights. We find interesting legal topics to bring to you and let you know how the law affects you. Find In Legal Terms on any podcasting platform on your smart device or on our website, inlegalterms.mpbonline.org.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
You're listening to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Think Radio. I'm Leslie Barker with the Mississippi Arts Commission, and today I'm talking with voiceover artist and writer and just a multi-talented theater artist, MPB's very own Carrie Grayson Horn.
Well, hello. Hello. Glad to be back.
We're so happy to have you. And, I want to jump into kind of talking about the work, some of the work you've done here at MPB, among other things, but you are an Emmy-winning artist for your work with Ed. Let's talk about Ed Sed first. Tell us about that.
Okay. Ed Sed is just, he is a joy to work. Mm. That project is a joy to work on because of who he is, just as a character, but also the people that I get to work with on that character. Ed Sed came about in about 2010, and he was actually created by a former employee here called named C.J. Burks, and Tywo Gaynor, who's still here, and Scott Caldwell, who used to be here. Those three came together, and they worked on a program that was that came from a North Mississippi school that was moving with fruits and vegetables, and they decided this whole curriculum. They came out with 10 different types of fruits and vegetables that Ed Sed would sing about. They wrote the music, and then they called me in, and they were like, hey, how would you like to be the puppeteer and the voice of this character? And I went, great. Let me see the character so I can see what kind of voice might come out. So we got the puppet, and I spent a few like hours in the dressing room just looking in the mirror and trying to figure out what does this guy sound like. And so turns out, if you want to know the secret of what Ed Sed sounds like, he's a mix between Bart Simpson and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Rankin Bass, that's his voice. That's who he is. So, you know, he's kind of a little bit of a smart aleck, but he always has a good heart, you know, that kind of thing. So, but I enjoyed it so much, getting in the booth, getting direction from CJ and Tywo and Scott, getting them to help me to sing those songs. Well, then we had CJ moved off, so I moved in to another one of the producer writer positions on the show. And for season two, we had all of us, me, Tywo, Scott Caldwell, all crafting these new songs about different types of fruits and vegetables, going out and writing some scene work that might go with those fruits and vegetables, where we had a great tomato farmer, named Kevin Farrell, who was amazing. You should go look that up, people. Tomatoes by Ed Sed. Anyway, you'll see Kevin Farrell in overalls. It's a great show. But just getting to work with all of them. And because of that, we were for the second season of Ed Sed, we were nominated for, I believe, four different regional Emmys for that. And we won three out of the four for that year. And it was just, it was mind blowing. It was a really fun night to be at the Emmys with all of my cohorts and co-creators, and it was just a wonderful night. By the end of the night, everybody in the room started singing the Ed Sed theme song whenever we went up there. So it was a lot of fun. So we're continuing to work on that. We started on one song for Ed Sed season three, and we're hoping to do some more. If you give to your local PBS station, we might be able to fund a season three. But I look forward to working with our team because it's really a lot of fun. And there are some creative people here at this station.
Man, I just love hearing about that. Just fully Mississippi grown. And while we're talking about that, how do you think this specific place, like of Mississippi, of MPB, how does that affect the work that you make?
I really don't know. But I just... There's something about Mississippi, and I don't know how to explain it.
I get
that. I've heard Dad try to explain it. He explains about the Delta, how it's all gray and all flat, and so any kind of color has to come from your own imagination. Any kind of flavor has to come from your own imagination. And I think that's been instilled in us in Mississippi, just to know that you have this creative soil that you're near. And something about MPB seems to pull in those type of people, pulls in very creative people, and they know that they have a license. They have an ability to go out. Do you have a crazy idea about putting a purple puppet singing and talking about vegetables and stuff? Okay, try it. There's that kind of attitude and license. And if it doesn't work, that's okay. But, you know, it's just that kind of fostering of talent, fostering of creativity here that I think just brings it out and helps everyone want to be a part of it. So
I think it's so important to be able to walk into a process and say, this might not work, but we're going to try it.
Exactly.
I literally always say the best things in rehearsal come out of the moments where you're like, this might not work. Mm-hmm. So to have that freedom, you know, in addition to everything else you're talking about, is just is really beautiful.
And that goes back to voiceover, too. You can, you know, you have a pirate. You're supposed to be doing a pirate. So everybody and their mom's going to come in and go, arg, you know, but what if you have a pirate that might go arg, you know, so you come in at it with another creative way. It may not work. It may book you the job. It just, it all comes down to just give yourself license and try something new within the law.
Within the law. Remember, we warned you.
Yes.
So, as you were talking earlier, you talked about this a little bit with the first time you looked at you know, the character and looking in the mirror. And so when you, whether it's the pirate or whatever, what speaks to you first about a voice?
It's actually, so when you get a cartoon character, when you're auditioning for a cartoon character, a picture will usually come with it. I get a lot from that picture. Or a description might come from it. And I go at that like a detective. I look at the picture and I'm like, what is their mouth doing? What are their eyes doing? How are they standing? What kind of description does it say about them? What description do other people have about this character also? Mm. And just trying to keep all of that in mind, and or either looking at a puppet and just saying, what's he about? What does his face tell me about how he might speak? And just, it's just a trial and error. Mm. You see the picture, and then you just try to emulate. How does this person sound? What does she sound like when she laughs? I don't know. So you might try a little laugh to try to jumpstart things. You might try a little sigh. I don't know. Just a little, say some of the words, and how does that fit coming out of this character? So
you just kind of know when it clicks. It's just like one of those moments.
Yeah. And also, while you're doing that, you have to think, can I sustain this particular voice over a season? Can I sustain this particular voice over, what was that, 2010 that I started Ed Said to 2022? Can I sustain that for that long? The answer is, he's gotten a little lower over time, but that's okay.
Puppets change too.
There you go.
So speaking of puppets, that is such a, like, cool, specific skill that not a lot of people are really, really trying. I mean, you know, it really does take a lot of training.
True.
Tell us a little bit about what it is to be a puppeteer.
What it is to be a puppeteer is a lot of fun. It's a lot of work. It is not something that just comes at you. Again, going back, like we were talking about teachers, having a great teacher to teach you How does this character look on camera? It is a very physical type of acting. So as an actor on stage, you've got your face, you've got your costumes, and all these people helping you out. You know, you've got a person maybe doing your makeup. Mm-hmm. You have a director telling you, say this line, you know, you're thinking this. You have a costumer. You have all sorts. You have a lighting person. You have a sound person. And you have your entire body to work with. With puppets, you've got to put all of that into this little felt and foam thing that's sitting on your arm. You're looking at a TV screen, a monitor, to kind of see what the puppet looks like in the frame of the picture. And so you're playing director a little bit, and you're seeing, am I in the lighting correctly? How's the costume looking just now? It's a lot. And then you got to think about the voice and the character and the motivation and all this sort of stuff. It's a lot. It's difficult, but with great teachers and great people supporting you, it's able to be done. Literally supporting you the other day, because I was having to do a Christmas spot downstairs with Ed Said, and one of the camera guys was like, do you want a chair behind you to kind of hold you up? I'm like, yes, please. So sometimes you have literal people helping support you. But yeah, it's something that does take a lot of practice and a lot of time, which is something that, as I like to say, if you're comfortable while you're puppeteering, you are doing it wrong.
Oh, wow.
It's a very physical thing, but it is. It's putting that character into foam and fur. Voiceover, it's putting that character just into your voice. And acting is the whole body, so. Did that answer your question?
It did.
Okay, good.
It did. And I'm curious about how or if for you the that physical movement and the voice tie together.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Especially in puppeteering, you're able to see, you know, what the character's doing on screen, and that kind of affects your voice. That tells you what you should be doing. In voiceover, you're seeing the script. I'm not just standing stock still behind the microphone. My hands have been waving this whole entire time, because that's what I do when I'm behind a microphone. Mm-hmm. Your whole body is into it. It's just like you're on stage, even maybe a little bit more heightened than when you're on stage. Mm-hmm. So... yeah, it's always full body, no matter what you're doing. So
whether you're doing the voice or the puppet with one hand, mm-hmm. you're full body to make that one detail focused part.
Your full body in a puppet maybe kind of, it may be still, but it's still, you know, your eyes are working, your face is working all the same time.
And the control it takes to have full stillness in the rest of your body is also insane.
It's also, yes. It's, it's intense. So
I do want to make sure we also talk a bit about Between the Lions.
Okay.
Because that received a National Daytime Emmy Award. Am I saying that right?
Mm-hmm.
Like National Daytime Emmy Award for Between the Lions. And that's... I forgot what I was going to say about that.
Okay.
Let me have you talk about that.
That was a blessing. That honestly was a blessing. Norman Stiles and Chris Cerf were the creators of Between the Lions. And Norman Stiles was the head writer for Between the Lions. He contacted me. He sent me a book called Stone Soup, which is one of my favorite
Stone
stories.
Soup, yeah.
He sent me that book, and then he called me a few days later, and he says, Carrie, I need to talk to you about that book right here that I sent you the other day. Yeah, I'm sorry, Norman, you don't sound like that. but he said, he talked me through it. He said, I need for you to create a little inset story mm-hmm. in Between the Lions that is based on Stone Soup. Mm. And I want you to use the letter S as much as possible. I was like, okay, sure. So he asked me to write a short segment in an episode of Between the Lions, which is what I did. That story got put into one of the episodes, and with a lot of guidance from Norman Stiles also. I got a master class in writing scripts from him, just reworking that, and I'm forever grateful for that. And so then that whole season of Between the Lions won a National Emmy for writing.
Oh, so cool.
And so I, little Carrie from Mississippi, got to be a part of the whole writing crew for that season. And so I'm one of the ones that got a National Emmy for
that's
that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to think of earlier when I lost my train. All I could think was MPB, but that was the National PBS
production. Yeah, that was
production.
That was a WGBH production filmed here. And so, yeah.
That's so cool.
So fun. Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so we also have to dive a bit into the onstage work that you do.
Okay.
So we'll touch on this a little bit, because I know we have to take a break very soon.
Okay.
So you know what? Let's just go ahead. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to get on stage in front of people. So you're listening to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Think Radio. I'm Leslie Barker. I'm talking with the multi-talented performer, Carrie Grayson Horn.
This is Leslie Barker. Thanks for listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. The show airs on MPB Think Radio every Sunday afternoon at 5. To access all of our past shows, subscribe to the Mississippi Arts Hour podcast using your favorite podcasting app.
Hi, I'm Ryder Taff, Portfolio Manager at New Perspectives, a fee-only financial advisory and co-host of Money Talks. Each week, we take your personal finance questions and tell you about a money topic we hope you find helpful. Money Talks can be heard Tuesdays at 9 a.m. on MPB Think Radio. Podcasts can be found on our website, money.mpbonline.org, or on your smart device's podcasting platform.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
You're listening to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Think Radio. I'm Leslie Barker with the Mississippi Arts Commission, and I'm talking with voiceover artist and actress Carrie Grayson Horn. So we've been talking a lot today with Carrie about her puppetry and her voice work and, you know, things on film, things in the booth. But we're also going to talk about the live stage stuff.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Which you studied in college. Is that correct? So tell us a little bit about studying theater.
Oh, yeah. So like I said, I was at Hines Community College. And I got there on a band scholarship. I was drum major, all that sort of good stuff. And then I discovered theater. So Denise Hallback was awesome, still is. And so I got in a play, but there was also, it was football season. So we also had to go and do football games and do the halftime show. And I really wanted to be in this play that she was casting. I really wanted to be in it. And she says, Carrie, you have to make a choice. Are you going to do theater or are you going to do band? I said, well, band is paying me money, so I have to finish out this semester of band, but then I'm all yours. So I did. I finished out the semester of band, and then I was theater the whole way. Changed my major and just said, nope, theater's it. This is it. And so from there, I studied theater at Hines, went on to University of Southern Mississippi in my sophomore and senior year. I did the Southern Arena Theater, which is their kind of their summer stock theater at Southern. I got to do that for two years, and then it was just sky's the limit. I just wanted to go out and do, this is what I wanted to do, is to do theater, but, you know, also had to make a living in Mississippi. So Which I have, luckily.
And it's so cool.
And it is difficult for an artist to make a living in Mississippi, which is so glad I've landed where I've landed at MPB. Tried a stint in retail, and that didn't work. So I'm here now. And I do. That gives me the freedom to now go and do things at New Stage Theater and just have a wonderful time working with all of the people, all of the creative people there. It's so great. It's just a great big community, like you know.
Oh, absolutely. What are some of, or do you have some maybe favorite stage moments? Let's go recently.
Okay.
Recent stage moments,
because
I know there's so many that you really loved at New Stage.
Yeah. The last thing I was in was back in March. Was the Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. One of the most fun characters I've ever gotten to play. And, of course, I can't remember her name right now because that's just how I am. But anyway, I got to play the older lady, and it was just so fun working. That whole entire play was just like, as soon as you start the play, it's like on a... It's on these moving tracks, and just you have to know exactly where and when to be. That was a lot of fun to be. And then... Murder on the Orient Express. Talk about dialects. That was a lot of fun. We had British, Irish, New York, German, you know, everything. I think I was, we had Belgian, everything. And so that was a lot of fun to be able to be in that, and also got to help with the dialects.
I was
going to
say, surely you were like a coach on that.
I helped. A lot of them already came in. Those people are professionals, so a lot of them already came in knowing. So I was just there to be like, yeah, you're doing great. And that was all I had to do. But just to be able to work with people and teach them dialects, too, was a lot of fun. And just being in Christmas plays, too, we got to do the Christmas Story, the musical, A Christmas Story, the musical. That was so much fun, just to be able to play an ensemble player and to be able to help move scenery and to, you know, make sure that all the kids' props are in the right place and make sure all the kids are in the right place and all that sort of good stuff. It's just every play I'm in is always a joy. I actually got to puppeteer in A Christmas Story, the musical, too. I got to play the Bumpus dog's tails.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was fun. That was a lot of fun.
Because what is Christmas without that story? I mean, we got to have Ralphie.
You got to have Ralphie. You got to have the dogs. You got to have the boiler
the
back in the... Yeah, you got to have all of it.
All of it. You know, something that I've loved in every segment of this conversation and in the breaks is how much you talk about the ensemble of it all.
Yes.
And it seems just to be such a part of who you are, and I believe of every good, you know, artist in theater. So let's talk a little bit about the different types of ensemble you work with.
Totally. First off, none of this stuff that I have done, none of this, the accolades I've been given has been given to me. It's been given to a group of people that I just happen to be a part of. Any blessing that I have received has been because someone has seen fit to to help me, seen fit to teach me, been in the right place at the right time around the right people, and just surround yourself with good people and you'll have good things is what I've found to happen. Different types of ensemble. There's when I'm in the booth, sometimes you're by yourself. So you're the ensemble. I'm not crazy, I promise. But sometimes I'm in a padded room and I'm talking to myself in different voices. And, you know, that's where they say I ought to be. But also, I love it when I get to work with directors, when it's their project that I'm just a small part of. And they're able to direct me over, you know, over the headphones or Skyping them in or some kind of Zoom session. And they're able to direct me, and it's just a back and forth there. That's the great ensemble that I have there. And then it's them putting together the animation and the sound and the words and the scripts and all that sort of great stuff to make a huge, awesome project. Then when you have things like theater, then you're on stage. Who built the sets? It's the set designers, set builders. Who painted them? Who gave you all the props? It's the props person. Who lit you so people can actually see you? It's the lighting guy. You know, who directed you? It's the great director who had a vision for all of this. Who's, like, helping you on stage all the time? It's your fellow actors. You know, who's creating this? It's the audience. Because if the audience isn't there, it's just a rehearsal. So it's everybody working in concert together to make a play happen. And that's what I just feel so grateful to be a part of, just to be a small little part. Then when you're doing, like, television, when you're doing television, sometimes I get to do the on-air stuff here at MPB. Sure, I'm standing there. I'm the one saying the words, but I didn't write them. There's a teleprompter. There's Glenroy, who's making the teleprompter work. There's the camera guys who are aiming the cameras at me. There's the lighting guy who's making the lighting happen. And the box that I'm standing on, you know, that somebody brought that in for me to stand on because I'm not as tall as Bill Ellison. You know that. No way. So it's just, I love that it's just, it's never just me. It has never been just me, and it will never be just me. And I'm not done. That's the thing. I'm continuing to grow. I'm continuing to learn because the time when you stop learning is the time they should be lowering you into the ground, is what I think. You know, when you're about to be 6 foot under, that's when you can stop learning. But until then, you've still got time. You've still got people you can learn from. You've still got projects you can work on. And I want to do as much as I can and learn as much as I can for as long as I can, really.
I love that, and I totally agree with that. You mentioned that you're always taking classes, you're looking to learn. Mm-hmm. How do you approach your continued learning? Like, how do you look for opportunities or what, you know, how do you find that?
A lot of people, a lot of times I find voiceover actors out there that I really admire. Mm. And I'll approach them and I'll be like, I really admire your work. Can you tell me who do you learn from? Where do you teach or who do you learn from? So I've found a lot of good coaches that way, a lot of good classes, or else I've heard other people say, man, this class has taught me so much. And I'll be like, great. And I'll look and see when is the next class available. And I will sign myself up, you know, and be like, put me on a waiting list or be ready to hit the button to take that class. I look for things around here, you know, who's giving workshops in Mississippi? Mississippi Arts Commission has a great the arts things that y'all do. Mm. There are some great workshops that y'all give that we're able to go and be a part of. So there's some great learning there.
I'm glad that you mentioned that for a couple of reasons. We do have an arts conference, which you have been part of with the Royal Y'all, which we will talk about also.
Yeah.
But we also offer grants for this type of training. And I don't want anybody to miss a money opportunity for some artist training. So
there you go.
Go to our website, arts.ms.gov. We have mini grants twice a year, and you can apply to get professional development or training, go to workshops. So the type of thing that Carrie's talking about, if you want to do that, we want to help you. So
awesome.
Go check that out.
Guys, free money. Free money for free classes.
You too,
what?
Carrie.
Oh, okay. Me too. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Check us out.
Cool.
Check us out.
I will check it out. I'm writing it down now.
Because I just, you know, that's what we want to do. We want to help artists.
Mm-hmm.
And So I love that we touched on that. I also, because we talked about the conference a little bit and the Royal Y'all Royal Y'all. It's kind of hard to say sometimes.
Sorry.
No, but it's so fun. I love it. Tell us about it.
So the Royal Y'all is an improv group here in Jackson that was started back in 2018, I believe. And we got to go around the whole state. We got to perform mostly here in Jackson, but we did get to go up to Tupelo and down to over to Meridian and also Vicksburg, all sorts of good places. And what we do is we just put on a good show. It's like a good 2-hour show. We've got one coming up in February at Beth Israel Temple. We've got one coming up in April at Pace Setter Gallery in Flowood.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. It just got started as a group of people. Actually, a person here at MPB said, we need an improv group. And I'm like, okay, let's make an improv group. So we did. And that's where they came from. But now it has grown because we have so many, like you say, like everything else, it's a great ensemble. It's a great group of people. They're much funnier than I am, I promise you. So these people, they have some great skills, too. One of our people is a great workshop presenter, creating workshops. And that's something that we've been able to do is go out and teach teachers how to teach better, teach business people how to connect with their employees and coworkers better through improv. And that's one thing that that's one thing we're going to be able to do in January that I'm absolutely so excited about. Is we're going to be able to, it's like a whole day. We're going to do mini performances for kids, and then we're going to stay behind and actually talk to the teachers about how they can use improv to teach their lessons to the kids or, you know, just engage with the children better and engage with parents also. So
we call you guys all the time to
Oh, yes.
do things like for the arts commission, for all schools, for every conference we have, you know,
yeah.
because it is the skills that you use in that work. Are so universal.
It's true. And when I was first, when they were like, hey, we could do workshops about this. I'm like, what? And make people laugh? Like, no, you don't understand. And I had to be explained, you know, someone explained it to me. But then it does. It just makes so much sense in your everyday life. Like just one of our steps that we have is step up and step mm-hmm. back. If you see that you're the one who's kind of taking over the conversation, you're the one who's taking over the meeting, or you're the one taking over the whole, you know, whatever's going on, take note of that. And you might step back and let someone else take over the conversation for a little while or, you know, make another point in the meeting or tell another story. You know, step back a little bit. Or if you see that you have been stepped back for a long period of time, you might step forward and then, you know, offer a good anecdote or, you know, some kind of point in a meeting or in a class type situation. That's just one. And there's like 8 of them. So there you go.
I mean, and that's, you know, the whole idea of yes and, mm-hmm. which we had you guys do a whole workshop about, is we talk a little bit about that for people
Sure.
may not know improv.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Sure. Okay. So improvisation is basically what I love the most because you don't have to memorize anything. It's amazing. You walk up on stage and you have no idea what is going to happen. Improv is where 8 people get together. And we're standing in front of an audience, and we get suggestions from the audience, like, tell us where we might be at this point in time. And so they'll say someplace like, you're on Mars. And so, okay, yes, and we're on Mars. We are on Mars, and we are searching for Martian marshmallows right now. So it's that yes and. You can't say, no, I don't want to be on Mars. Let's try someplace else like Disney World. No, that's not how you do it because that just that kills everything. So yes, you're on Mars, and you're searching for Martian marshmallows. Then you take that and you keep on yes-anding it. It's like, yes, we're looking for marshmallows, and we're going to make s'mores. You know, you go from there, and you just try to figure out how to keep on plussing it. And that's what improv is about, taking a situation and just accepting it and making and adding to it and adding more to it. So,
which really does translate so well into any kind of meeting.
Yeah.
You know, not shutting people down, but saying, okay, yeah.
Yes.
And? You know?
Yes, exactly. I think that is a great proposal for a television show. And, you know, let's look at doing it, you know.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been thinking through this whole conversation. Wonder what your favorite thing is. Now, you did say just now that you loved improv because you don't have to memorize
that
anything.
That is so true.
Is it?
What is my favorite thing?
And maybe you can't pick a favorite, and that's okay.
And I know. But the thing is, it's all acting. Mm. It's all acting. Puppeteering, voiceover, improv, on stage. It's all just acting. It's all connecting with others, which sometimes as an introvert, I don't really care to. But, you know, it's just a connection with others. It's telling stories, and it is just trying to bring enjoyment, whether it's laughter, whether it's tears, just some kind of connection and enjoyment from other people. Mm. I think that's what my favorite part of it is. Wow. Thanks for this therapy session. I appreciate this.
Well, since we're talking about, like, the heavier side of things, curious, how did you, because I feel like this is something you could easily do during COVID, how did you keep working during COVID with this?
And there was a moment in time that, and I was just like, nope, we're just going to stay in the house. We're not going to do anything. We're not going to talk to anybody. This is it. Nope.
Yeah.
I think all of us went through at least a stage of that. But actually what I did is with my improv group, we started doing online virtual shows. We did some virtual shows for different companies around the state. And, even online with the Mississippi Arts Commission, with Mississippi Theater Association, we did online improv games that way. But just being able to get out and still connect with people was another way. New Stage Theater had a little get together where we'd all like just just meet together and just say howdy virtually, you know. And it was just a great way to stay connected. Is what it was.
I thought of that because everything you've talked about has been about connecting.
Yeah.
And I have had a wonderful time connecting with you today,
I have
too. And we're out of time.
Oh, no.
Which makes me so sad. And I just want to thank you, Carrie, for being here today. It was such a wonderful conversation.
Thank you, too. Thank you, Leslie, because I have had fun. I've had fun connecting with you today.
Absolutely.
Hey.
And to our audience, thank you for listening. And remember to tune in each week for the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Think Radio.
Thanks for listening to this MPB Think Radio podcast. MPB depends on support from listeners, so if you can, please contribute today at mpbonline.org.
Deep South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor, from fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB public media app.